Members, we will call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. We now have an official quorum. Representative Loon, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from yesterday's meeting?
Indeed, I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon moves the minutes from the March 21st meeting. Any questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of those minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes from yesterday's meeting are approved. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Loon. With that, we will get on to our agenda. We're hoping to move as quickly as we possibly can tonight. Representative Anderson, we are House File 2151?
Yes.
Or 2150, sorry. Would you like to move that bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I'd move House File 2150. And if I could, I have a delete everything amendment as well.
That is the DE2 amendment?
Yes.
That should be in members' packets?
Mr. Chair, if I can move that amendment.
Representative Anderson moves the DE2 amendment. Do you want to explain that amendment now, or should we adopt the amendment and then talk about the bill?
Yes.
Members, any questions about the amendment? Let's get it in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The DE2 amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. What this bill, and as amended, does is put a temporary moratorium on government groups joining the public employee insurance pool. What has been happening, because those that belong to PEEP do not pay into MCHA, the MCHA fund has been declining in funding, and that shifts the cost burden onto individuals and small businesses. And so to get a better handle on that whole process, what we'd like to do is just place a moratorium right now on folks joining PEEP and just try and stabilize MCHA until we can figure out something better. Mr. Chair, at this time, I do have some testifiers. I've asked them to be brief because I know you appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And if you welcome back to the committee. If you want to identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,300 business members throughout the state, 70% of which are small businesses with fewer than 50 employees. The Minnesota Chamber supports House File 2150 and thanks Representative Anderson for bringing it forward. Basically, we support this legislation because we believe it will stabilize the MCHA assessment. As many of you know, MCHA is the state's high-risk insurance pool, and it's paid for an assessment that is applied retroactively and varies annually with the number of entities that are paying it. MCHA assessments apply only to the fully insured market. The fully insured market is paid by small businesses, the self-employed, and individuals. They comprise only 25% of the overall insurance market, and yet they pay 100% of the MCHA assessment. When groups leave to go to public programs, such as PEEP, that do not have the same MCHA assessment, that leaves fewer groups to pay the MCHA assessment, namely increasing the cost of health care for small businesses. We're supportive of House File 2150 because this temporary moratorium will help stabilize those costs and give small businesses a more predictable environment in which to budget for their future health care costs. So with that, I'd say thank you for your time. Thank you to Representative Anderson, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johansson. Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Representative Anderson, do you have others that want to testify in favor of the bill?
I did have Kirby Erickson and Catherine Commit if they wanted to come forward.
Okay.
Catherine Commit is part of the auditor interview.
Ms. Commit, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you to Representative Sarah Anderson for carrying this bill. Yes, the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, who I represent, is supportive of this bill. As you know, in this committee, the fully insured market continues to shrink, and as that market shrinks, more and more people move into the self-funded market. So the remaining small employers and individuals who purchase in the fully insured market have to bear a greater burden of healthcare taxes, including the MCHA assessment. What this bill does is simply says, let's take a pause here before we, before, you know, who knows what's going to happen with federal health care reform, but let's take a pause and try to have more certainty in the marketplace so that there isn't a lot of pressure on individuals and small employers who purchase in this market. I also just want to reference the letter from the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, MCHA, from the executive director, who couldn't be here tonight, was here yesterday, but also would like to extend his comments to the committee and say that it's very The MSHA board and the Mr. Erickson from the MSHA board believes that it's very important that we stabilize MSHA and not have it continue to be a disproportionate burden on the fully insured market. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit. And we do apologize for not getting to this yesterday. We are all blaming Representative Sanders. Members, any questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. either Representative Anderson or Ms. Kevitt?
Ms. Kmit.
Kmit could answer this. I guess the question I have is, we're putting a three-year moratorium on this, and you're saying we need to just take a breather, but are we have intentions to do a study as to ways we could better fund MSHA to stabilize that? Because if 3 years from now there might be a built-up demand from people that are looking at doing this, going into the PEEP program to save money for the local governments. Are we going to then have a huge mass exodus from that and again be back at the same place? Are we looking at a way of better funding MSHA?
Ms. Kmit.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the problem with the way that we fund MSHA today is that because of the federal ERISA preemption, we are not allowed to impose the assessment on anyone purchasing in the self-funded market. So I don't have lots of copies of this, but I think you've seen this graph before where the fully insured market is really a small piece of the overall population, and the biggest part of the pie is the self-funded market. And so that pressure continues to build on the fully insured, and groups and individuals jump out of that and try to self-fund or drop insurance altogether, which is not what we want them to do. The other thing that is happening, and regardless of what side you are on as it relates to the federal health care reform legislation, is that there are going to be some big changes coming in 2014. And I think there are changes that are likely to occur regardless of what happens with the court case. And so there's so much uncertainty in the marketplace right now about what might happen. If the mandate is upheld, then that will make it easier for the MSHA program because people will have an easier time transitioning into the regular marketplace. But we don't know the answers to that. And until we have that certainty, we think this bill is needed.
Well, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that doesn't answer. I would be more comfortable doing this if there was a study involved in this or to look at how we're going to solve this problem, because, you know, even if the health care bill passes constitutional muster and goes forward, we're still going to have a way to fund this program. And this has nothing to do about looking at how to do that. And if we were going to put a moratorium on, in 3 years, even with whether the health care bill is constitutional or not, we're going to still be back at this problem 3 years from now, having to find a way to fund MSHA. So, I mean, I guess that's what I'm asking. Is there intent to look at do a study of some sort or a industry study of a way to fund this to make sure that we have MSHA? Because it's a very valuable program. I have people that have used it and are still using it. And so, I mean, I understand why it's there, and I understand the concern.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. I agree with you that this is an issue that needs to be examined so that we don't have to come back in 2015 and extend it without having any results after that time period. That's part of the reason that the date was set at 2015 rather than at 2014 when the Health Care Act will come into play. Then you have an extra year to see what some of the impact of that will be and give us a little better idea of what we need to do as part of that challenge. But I know that Ms. Kmit and Mr. Erickson from MSHA, that's part of their goals in the next coming 3 years.
Representative Nelson, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, while I listen to this, I mean, the real problem here is the unmanageable cost of health care. That's the problem that we're dealing with. And why public employees have to take it on a chin, I guess I'm not convinced at all. I was looking at the PEEP website, for example, and says it was designed exclusively to give public employees the comprehensive coverage they deserve. And I really think that's true. So why we should put a moratorium on this for public employees just makes absolutely no sense. It says PEEP combines public employee groups all over Minnesota to maximize insurance buying power and secure competitive rates. Well, public employees sure have that option to do that, to enjoy the competitive market and get good rates. It doesn't make any sense. It's particularly a moratorium where it's just totally cut off. I just cannot accept that at all. Will there be any testimony in opposition to this? Do you know?
Okay. I'll hold my comments on that.
There will be. But they said that they didn't want to hear from you. So, just kidding, just kidding. Representative Lilly, did you have a question?
Not at this point.
Okay. Representative Anderson, do you have anyone else that wants to testify in favor?
No.
Okay. Otherwise, we have, come on out, Ms. Allswager wants to testify, and I think the firefighters and others want to. So, welcome back to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And if I could have the page hand out this document, and if I could ask you to hold off looking at it until I start talking
about
it. Oh,
goody, we love surprises.
If I was using my teacher methods, I would wait to distribute it, but I don't know, that doesn't always work very well here. Well, we are certainly very opposed to this bill. If we wanted to really level the playing field, we would say that there would be a moratorium on anyone going into a self-insured plan or anyone going into the service co-ops, and that's not going to happen, and that's not realistic. But we are just singling out public employees, the local units of government, and saying you can't go into MCHA, or excuse me, into PEEP, because of the cost of MCHA is one of the reasons. Well, it isn't just a 3-year. If I've calculated the contract years for us, because we can only go into PEEP unilaterally or the exclusive rep during a contract negotiations year. So this pushes us out even farther. It's not just a 3-year moratorium. It's longer. I'm going to bear with me while I give you a little history, because some of you have been around and heard our discussions and saw the vetoes for the school employee statewide health insurance pool. And Representative Lilly, you were one of them who said, you know, we want competition. Republicans and Democrats said, we want more competition. You also said, you should use PEEP. You also said it should be voluntary. So that is what Education Minnesota did. We went and organized our locals and said, you can check out PEEP. You can get a bid from PEEP. And so as a result, Education Minnesota, with our out-of-the-box thinking, saved the school districts and school employees millions and millions of dollars. Governor Ventura said there's a black hole in school funding. You know what it is? It's health insurance costs. Take a look at the document that I distributed to you. Now, the first thing I will say is that these are not all apples-to-apples comparisons, because they might be different benefit plans. But the point is some of them were very, very close. But I will just point out a few of them. If you look at... my point is, first of all, that by going through these PEEP bids, we drove down insurance premiums. On page 2, number 12, is Cambridge. They did not go out for a bid with PEEP. They had a 14% increase. Page 3, Duluth, they saved over $1 million the first year alone. And those numbers are quite staggering if you read the Duluth News Tribune article. Edina, on that same page, saved 10% in premiums and 23% annual reduction in consultant fees. Page 4, Faribault had a reduction of 14% in their premiums. Howard Lake Waverly on page 5, 10% decrease. Going on to page 13, I'll skip a few pages. Roseville, a decrease of 10% or $1,215,000. And to sum it up, White Bear Lake saved 23% in their premiums, a reduction of 23%, over $2 million in 1 year. We should be saying thank you to Education Minnesota for figuring out how we could reduce premiums. Why did this happen? For once, we had true competition. When the insurance companies heard about the PEEP bid, that they were going for a bid, they came back to our teachers and said, okay, well, it won't be so much. We'll reduce it. When the bid actually came out to see the real numbers, it went even lower. We even had some that said, well, if you don't, some insurance companies who said to our teachers, if you don't go for a bid, we'll reduce your premiums. I understand we all want to take care of MCHA. The reality is, we just talked to PEEP today, there are 4,725 lives in PEEP. That's the number that I just got. We only had about 3,000 or so people go into PEEP this last round. Of those 3,000, only 1,000 approximately, these are Mr. Morocco's numbers, only about 1,000 actually is a cost to PEEP. Because about 2,000, again, approximate numbers, already were in a self-insured type plan, most of them probably coming from the service co-ops. There is no reason to pass this bill. If you do, you will be voting for higher costs for school districts and for school employees. I think that there is better ways to try to figure out MCHA, and Representative Representative Johnson, you're right. We should figure out how to fix MCHA, and we'll be there, right there, to help you. Now, if you want to pass the statewide health insurance pool, you know, we'll talk to you about that too. But I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to ask Ms. Allswiger, in looking through this chart, I'm wondering, and I think you referenced this maybe a little, but so when the districts that did go out and seek a bid from PEEP, were those bids on sort of identical coverage packages from what the other providers were offering? Or not? So when you're looking at the price differentials, is it for the same types of coverage and deductibles and all?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, some of them turned out to be identical. I know one of them was specifically. Some of them were different. The bottom line is that our members have to live with these benefits. Over the last, I would say, 8 years, our teachers have been seeing double-digit increases and significant reduction in benefits and significant increases in premiums. I can virtually guarantee you, not in every case, that what they were seeing here, if they went to the, if they had gone to it, would have been far, I should say, would have been a lesser change in benefits as compared to what have they have been seeing over the last 8 years. Teachers paying $20,000 in family premiums, having $8,000 deductibles. They cannot afford health insurance, many of them. One of these districts said if it hadn't been for their PEEP bid, they would have no health insurance this year. They had already decided that. You might also hear, well, what about those employees that are left if the teachers go to PEEP, because there were only about 30 of the districts in their very small districts that went to PEEP. What if the secretaries or the custodians don't go with? I will tell you that that is the decision of the school board. Because when we get a bid from PEEP, and I just confirmed this today, all of the bid is made up of all of the school employees. Custodians, secretaries, paraprofessionals, administrators, teachers. If a decision is made to go into PEEP, by current law, it's the exclusive rep, so the teachers can go in. Anybody in the exclusive rep can make that decision. So if the secretaries are an exclusive representative, they can go in on their own. The employees who do not have a union, it is the school board's decision. So if you ever hear that, well, we can't do that because it'll leave those employees behind, you talk to the school boards about that, because those are the ones who are making the decisions to leave those employees behind.
Thank you, Ms. Altsweger. Representative Loon, you're good?
Yes,
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Anderson, what for you is the purpose of the bill? Is it to rescue MCHA? Is that what the intent is, or why are you presenting the bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look in your folder, I believe that you all received this handout, and it explains in there that MCHA has had a stance to lose $41 to $50 million. And if you're not familiar with the MCHA program, what that does is it provides coverage to individuals and small business folks with health coverage. And if we do not have a completely solid MCHA fund, what you're saying to these individuals is that they're not going to be able to access health care. Now, I understand where Ms. Altsweger is coming from. We don't impact any of the school districts that are on this list. We do not impact any of the cities that have already entered into a PEEP program. If you're already in PEEP, this bill does not impact you at all. This is only going for those who have not entered the program and maybe a year from now want to enter it. This just says we're going to put this on hold to stabilize MCHA, which is key to providing health care coverage for individuals and small businesses.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Altsweger, if you could come back, I had some questions for you. And actually, Mr. Chair, while she's making her way back, I just want to ask a general question for anybody who's present, and maybe Representative Anderson or Ms. Altsweger does know the answer to this. Does PEEP allow a HSA or a high deductible insurance program?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, very, very good question. I'm going to give Governor Pawlenty a pat on the back because he...
Mr. Chair.
I will relay that to the governor.
Because he, under his supervision, he created the Advantage Plan, which is what you have as a state employees. And then in order for, he did the same thing for, or had his people do the same thing for PEEP. But because the local unit of government insurance for our teachers and city and county people is so poor, what they had because their insurance premiums were going crazy and their benefits were being reduced, they could not give them just that choice that you have. They had to create two more. They had to have the HSA and a middle level because they could not jump to the plan that you have because their benefits were so low already. And so that is why there are now three plans that you can choose from in PEEP. The district and the teachers can talk about those things. But it is the more comprehensive plan like you have, a more moderate plan, and then the HSA.
Thank you, Ms. Altsweger. Representative O'Driscoll.
If I could just have folks look at page 13, number 22, please. That happens to be the school district that I'm probably most familiar with in my district on this, and I want to just indulge the committee's patience for just a moment because I do have a point I'd like to make on this. During the time that I was in the city of Sartell as a council member and mayor, one of the things that I worked very diligently on was insurance, providing insurance coverage for our employees. And one of the things that we experienced was some of the same things that Ms. Altsweger and others, I'm sure, are going to testify to today. And so we did is we moved from the copay type of system to a high deductible program. And what we were able to do with premium savings between the two policies were to plans were to roll those back into benefits for employees. Marvelously, it was going swimmingly well for us in the city of Sartell, and the business manager from the school district called and said, "So what are you folks doing over there at the city?" And they actually adopted a model similar to what we've had for their employees as well. And the reason I bring that up is if these individuals would have gone to PEEP, they may or may not have had this HSA option, or the option that the school district had was a VEBA, and I realize I'm getting kind of deep into the weeds on some of this stuff, but the point I want to make is that if we take folks off of these different programs and these different plans and move them from the private insurance, we do create a problem for MCHA, and we do create a problem for these individuals if PEEP is no longer competitive for them and they want to go back to the private market. It's not just a one-way street that we're looking at. a moratorium seems appropriate, that we would do some kind of data gathering and research on this, because the fact that PEEP doesn't have MCHA contribution to it, it always has an advantage over any other kind of private sector plan, less that of self-insurance. Either PEEP or self-insurance continues the MCHA problem. And that's what I want folks to stay on, is up higher on the level on this, instead of saying, how could we have competition between a private plan and PEEP? Theoretically, PEEP already has fees that it doesn't have to pay, MCHA and some others, as I understand, that private sector policies have to pay. Some of the associations that school districts belong to have pooled together with different kinds of co-ops and things to try to get safety in numbers because of adverse selection. This problem that we're looking at is bigger than just PEEP or private insurance. I applaud Representative Anderson for wanting to take this on and have us take a look at something that's more global on this, because the problem's not going to go away. We're going to have more uninsured or underinsured individuals in the state of Minnesota if we allow MCHA to kind of, if I could use the term, fly in the wind and not shore that program up. This is a bigger problem of whether than we just, again, have private insurance or whether we have PEEP as an option. Interestingly enough, Representative Nelson and I started a discussion earlier today in government operations on this same type of idea when we're looking at the pension bill. One of the things that I can tell members here today as well is the folks who are asking for this from government operations, we had people testifying last year and this year in front of the committee saying, we would like to be able to be involved. Open it up to us. We're nonprofits. Open it up to us. This is not just public employees that are looking at this. There's others that are trying to seek refuge in another system. And so I ask the committee to think long and hard before they say, nope, we shouldn't be putting a moratorium on, because what we could be doing is kicking a problem further down the road that we need to address today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Ms. Allswager, did you want to?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I think I wish I knew the number of employees that were in the service co-ops, because that the numbers they have in the service co-op are far more significant than the 4,725 lives in PEEP. And I would remind you that only 1,000 lives went in this round. Even though 220 bargaining units sought a bid, only 1,000 went in. So I don't know where the $41 to $50 million come from, because with 1,000 people, and I just don't see how that's even possible. And I would say that the competition in the free market worked, because they liked their insurance company. But for once, they had competition.
Representative Nelson, and then after that, I think we'll get Mr. Thornburg up here and anybody else that wants to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just wanted to reiterate what Representative O'Driscoll was saying, that, again, I could see a freeze, if or a three-year freeze, if there was a study attached to it, so we could look at and get data and look at where we could do to shore it. But this is just a freeze, and we're back in 3 years from now, we're going to be right back at this, where we have no new data that we're going to be, you know, looking at the same problem.
Thank you, Mr. Thornburg. If you want to come up, welcome back to the, or welcome. I think you've been here before.
Yes, I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name's Tom Thornburg. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. The Minnesota Professional Firefighters represent 1,600 full-time professional firefighters, paramedics, and dispatchers, comprised of 40 bargaining units throughout the state. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, which represents 900 sworn law enforcement officers in the city of Minneapolis. I'm here today to express our perspective on House File 2150. PEEP has been in existence for nearly 25 years. It has served as a valuable and steady and reliable source of health insurance for public employees throughout the state. Most local government units who use PEEP are from greater Minnesota. They tend to be small communities where the ability to obtain insurance is limited. PEEP has provided insurance to those communities when no one else could or would. In many respects, it's been a vital lifeline to small communities and their public employees. Although it is a small program, it is a vital one, as I said, and the firefighters' main contact with PEEP came when the city of Minneapolis and all 18 bargaining units in the city of Minneapolis sought a bid for PEEP to provide insurance just 2 years ago. The initial proposal from the city's carrier, the current carrier, was that instead of a 19% increase, the carrier would offer a 13% increase in premiums if we did not go out for bid. We advised the carrier we're going to go out for bid. The city and the unions worked together and sought a bid from PEEP. It was competitive and attractive. And faced with the PEEP bid, the city's insurance carrier countered with a bid for a negative 1% renewal and a rate cap for the next 2 years. That bid saved the city and its employees $9 million in each year of the 3-year contract. This was real savings to our taxpayers and the 5,000 employees, both union and non-union, in Minneapolis. In our opinion, this well-documented savings of public resources in Minneapolis outweighs whatever minor losses to MNCHA or MCHA might occur by some groups migrating to PEEP from the private sector insurance companies. Members, I can testify here today with absolute certainty that the mere existence of PEEP saved $9 million for Minneapolis, for taxpayers and employees each and every year of the 3-year average. PEEP is an honest, credible, and reliable provider of health care benefits. It should be continued. There is no need for a moratorium on PEEP. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thornburg. And could you please express the committee's apologies, I guess, or my apologies to Mr. Lukowski, who was here yesterday. We're blaming Representative Stensrud for that yesterday.
Okay, I will.
Thank you. And we appreciate you coming here today. I know he was slated to do this yesterday. So.
Right.
They were blaming you earlier. Thank you. Members, any questions for Mr. Thornburg? I think we need to hear from Ask Me. Please come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Thorson with Ask Me Council 5. And our experience with PEEP is actually the experience that Mr. Thornburg just described. And if House File 2150 were in place in calendar year 2010, we would not have been able to realize those savings. In Minneapolis, $9 million a year for 3 years of the plan. I mean, that 14% spread represented $9 million in savings both to the city, the employees, and the taxpayers of Minneapolis in an apples-to-apples comparison from the same provider, because there was an ability to go out for a bid. This is a tool that is win-win-win for public employers, employees, and taxpayers, and would not have been possible were a moratorium in place. Another aspect is that PEEP offers a plan structure that the other providers don't. It's the one that CGIP offers. It mirrors that. And it's aggressive plan design that works very strongly with the folks that provides insurance with to reduce costs. It's just not a product that's offered by any of the other providers. And it's an important one that we'd like to see continued in the market. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. I always want to say Thorstenson because I have a constituent that I talk to frequently named John Thorstenson. So thank you, Mr. Thorsten. Members, any questions? Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else that wants to come down? Please come forward, sir. Whenever you're ready, if you can start and identify yourself for the tape, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Mr. Chair and representatives, good evening. My name is Bruce Anderson. I'm the benefits manager for the State Employee Group Insurance Program, which also includes PEEP. We're concerned that barring new public employee groups from entering the PEEP program will be detrimental to the existing membership and could very well be the end of PEEP. As lower cost groups leave the pool, they leave the higher cost groups behind. That means over time, PEEP will become a smaller and sicker pool, which will drive up costs for the local units of government and spread them over a smaller group than exists now. Barring new groups will increase the volatility of claims for existing groups and send the program into a death spiral. This will lead to higher premiums, which will drive more groups out of the pool. The loss of PEEP or even its significant diminishment will cause the most harm for small local units of government. In the traditional market, a group is at least two covered employees. PEEP serves at least 10 groups of one employee. The loss of PEEP will leave these groups of one with no group options and will likely increase result in increased costs to the smallest units of government. A moratorium on PEEP membership will not stabilize MSHA. Last year, 220 school districts in the state requested quotes from PEEP, and only 27 of them joined. Further, 23 non-school districts requested quotes, and only 3 joined PEEP. Therefore, most of the new PEEP membership came from other self-insured options that did not pay into MSHA. Of the 2,325 members who joined since January 2011, only 923 were paying the MSHA assessment before joining PEEP. They could have joined the service co-ops and not paid the MSHA fee either. We calculated that PEEP's share of the 2012 MSHA assessment for these 923 members would be approximately $263,000, or only about 0.16% of the total projected $168 million MSHA assessment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions? Representative Johnson, did you have a question? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was really intrigued by some of the things that you had suggested about the number of people and the aging population and things, and that's intriguing. I think that that's something that we need to take a look at. What's one of the reasons why people are or groups are paying higher insurance premiums is probably because they have some high users within the pool. And if you're talking about the large number of people who are coming to the PEEP pool, do you see any kind of an increase in the adverse selection process that could also be leading to the quicker demise of PEEP other than an aging population?
Mr. Anderson.
I don't know actually the exact demographics of each group coming in. I mean, just general insurance principles are that, you know, if you freeze a group, the healthier groups are going to leave if they can get a better quote somewhere. The sicker groups will stay, and over time, the insurance premiums for those staying groups will increase.
So. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not to the testifier. I just want to again revisit really quickly, because they've used the term MCHA, that people understand what that is. In the state of Minnesota, if you go as an individual to an insurance company, fill out an application, go through underwriting, have been rejected, you are now qualifying for the state's high-risk pool, which MCHA supports. So what you do is you take your rejection letter, you go over to MCHA, you fill out an application, you're assigned an insurance carrier, you pay a little bit higher premium as the individual than you might have if you were a standard risk at an insurance company. What happens is all the insurance companies participate in this who are covered, they pay the MCHA fee, and then if the insurance company has higher claims than would have normally been actually accounted for because of that additional high risk, MSHA shores that up. If MSHA doesn't have money, we still have people who have insurance needs. We've got to fill that gap somehow. And I know that we don't have the authority to order a study because of the money. I think that is where we need to be looking at this issue more globally, and I will just close with that as a comment.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for winding down. What I think about as I listen to more of these abstract discussions of PEEP versus MCHA is the fact that these are real people we're dealing with, firefighters and law enforcement people, teachers, and public service workers throughout the state, and they're paying these darn high health care premiums, and they certainly should have the opportunity given their family situations and the high premiums to get a better deal. And these are real people who have real problems with their costs and what they're paying for things. And if they can have an opportunity to get a better deal on their insurance, they should certainly have the opportunity. And to put a moratorium to block that, it just is wrong. And I hope we vote it down.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me, after listening to all the testimony, that the problem is sustainability for MCHA. And so we're going to penalize a program like PEEP that is successful in keeping rates lower, in the free market, making other insurance company bids more competitive. So we're going to penalize them to stabilize MCHA. And that just doesn't work for me. There needs to be a better way to sustain MCHA. And that seems to be the core of the issue here rather than PEEP. PEEP appears to be very successful at saving money for cities and towns and school districts. So I have a real problem with this bill because you're penalizing a successful group that in the free market is making a difference in cost for health insurance for people and cities and towns and school districts to stabilize one program that, yes, it's absolutely necessary to have, but maybe there's a different way or more creative way to stabilize that program rather than penalizing PEEP.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Sure. I just have one also very, if Ms. Allswager, is she? Nope. Well, I'll make
note. We'll stall until she comes back.
No, don't do that. I just want to make note. I'm listed here as Minneapolis, rep from Minneapolis. I teach in Minneapolis, okay, on some of the mean streets, if you want to know the truth. But I represent Richfield and Bloomington. So I just wanted to get on the record correctly identified.
Representative Slocum, welcome to my world. I'm not even listed in there. Very hurtful. Yeah, thank you. Representative Anderson, did you have a comment? Members, any other questions?
Just Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Loon.
Well, and I'm sorry to delay, but I'm just sitting here and I have to ask because I'm curious. And maybe staff would be best to answer this if unless others want to. But why does PEEP not pay into MCHA? Was that something done when it was created that they were specifically exempted? I mean, I know that the self-insured, that gets into federal laws and gets messy, but I'm wondering why PEEP doesn't.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I phoned a friend here to help out on that issue.
Welcome back, Ms. Commit.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, the reason PEEP doesn't pay is because it's a state program. I mean, it's a state-created insurance plan for public employees. Like the CEGIP program, the State Employee Group Insurance Plan, they also don't pay the MCHA assessment because the state requires that this assessment be paid by those in the private market, in the fully insured market, but not on its own products through the state.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think what Ms. Commit said is basically we exempted ourselves.
Let's not use that we too broadly.
The royal we, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you.
Members, any other questions? We like that. Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, brevity. I just want to, as people think about this vote, a Democrat president by the name of Bill Clinton had, after he was elected, his wife spent probably 3 out of the first 5 weeks that they were in the White House in the state of Minnesota looking at what we were doing right in insurance. And one of the things that rose to the top was the MCHA program and how it was working. And now that hangs in the balance here in the state of Minnesota. I just want people to know that is a very beneficial program. That model could have gone national had President Clinton been able to be successful in insurance reform back in the 90s.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? We do appreciate members and guests coming back this evening. We do like to have a good time on this committee, but this is a serious subject and an important bill, and there have been good points expressed on both sides of this, and I appreciate the discussion. With that, Representative Anderson, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to briefly wrap it up, Representative Loon hit the nail on the head. If we were truly going to level the playing field, those that participated in PEEP would also pay the MCHA assessment. But we don't have that, and I'm not asking you to do that today. I'm not asking you to impact any of the participants that are currently in PEEP. In fact, if you have a bid out, that doesn't even impact you at this point. I'm just asking for those that have not gone through the bid process that we put a moratorium on so we can shore up MCHA, which provides health care coverage to individuals and employees of small businesses in the state. And I think that all of us can agree that that's an important task to have. So with that, Mr. Chair, I ask for your support and appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 2150 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Sanders?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Crawford?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kiefer?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Loon?
Aye.
Representative Masrell?
Aye.
Representative Mullery?
Nope.
Representative Murdoch?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Nope.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Slocum?
No.
Representative Stensrud?
Aye.
By a vote of 10 to 5, the motion does prevail. Thank you, members. Representative Runbeck, please come on down. Representative Runbeck, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
I will move House File 2499 so it is properly before us.
Very good, and I do have a handout for the page.
Thank you, and please proceed when you're ready.
Very good. Members, the House File 2499 is about public benefit corporations, and public benefit corporations are kind of a new idea out there, and it fills a gap between the nonprofit and the for-profit sector for individuals who want to do more nonprofit work with their for-profit generated funds. And right now, corporate law does not allow any hybrid. So once you have more than one shareholder, you are required to limit your donations and the social benefit kind of spending to 10% and no more. A perfect example of a company that would be ideal for this is Finnegan's Beer. They, you know, are organized really entirely to donate their profits to the issue of hunger. And the owner is a single owner, and so she's the only shareholder. And she can do that. With one shareholder, she can donate 100% of her profits to her cause. But by the time, at the point where she wants to grow and have more shareholders, she becomes limited. And so this is a kind of a trend that's moving across the country, and we think Minnesota is deserving of being the kind of state that should have this sort of law in place. And I want to thank the work of Steve Young, who has former dean of Hamline Law School and with the Coe Roundtable, who is focusing on this area. And he brings us this bill, and I think he can tell us more about it.
Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Mr. Young. If you could identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Young, the Global Executive Director of the Coe Roundtable, which is a small outfit housed here in St. Paul, which has a global network working on corporate social responsibility, and it has some deep roots in Minnesota, going back to 1991, 92, with people from the corporate community, such as Chuck Denny, Tony Anderson, and Wynn Wallen, who some of you may know, representing the Minnesota tradition of corporate responsibility on the part of private wealth and private corporations. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would first like to assure the committee that even though this is the evening of my 42nd wedding anniversary, there is no place I would rather be at this moment than in support of Representative Runbeck and this legislation.
Mr. Young, that is on the record.
Yeah, she heard that.
Since I think the collapse of credit markets in 2008, many people have been wondering, how can we do a better job of getting free markets in the private sector to deliver the kinds of goods that we need to feel that our society is maximizing opportunities all across the board in education, in culture, in social welfare, in the environment. And we have found ourselves in the past bifurcated into two structures set up by the law. One, not-for-profit corporations, which have no owners, which are to receive money donations each year, which do not have working capital, which are under great stress to raise every year on an annual basis operating funds, which find it very hard to get loans in order to invest in something, to build up something. On the other hand, as Representative Runbeck said, we have created for-profit corporations, which have owners, which have equity capital, which have working capital, which can access the capital markets. The sheet that's been passed around, and our colleague, Mr. Rob Scarlett, I think will speak in a moment to this, there's a lot of money out there, members and Mr. Chairman. If private wealth through the free market could be devoted to meeting community needs as defined freely by members of the community, we could create a lot more better outcomes for a lot more people. But we need a legal vehicle to do that. In thinking about the collapse of credit markets since 2008, a number of people have thought of this new model of a corporation, a benefit corporation, which uses free markets and private capital, but because of an entrepreneurial spirit that wants to do more than merely make profits, they are allowed to set forth certain public benefits. And people who buy and invest into these corporations are therefore on notice that they may take a lower financial return, but in the alternative, they would gain something in terms of culture, society, the environment, arts, education, things like that. And several examples, not only Finnegan's Beer, but if one could speculate on the delivery of a product such as sports entertainment. If a free market system is delivering sports entertainment on a large scale, which is tied to the community, we have some very different dynamics going. If great metropolitan dailies could be run in a way that they only needed to return 5 or 6% a year, rather than 15 or 20% a year, then we could have a free market delivery, including the challenges which newspapers are facing today with the digital market. This, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is a new idea. It's a timely idea. It can make a great deal of difference. It meets the need of those with capital who want to deploy their capital in ways that take care of a wide variety of needs. It gives an opportunity to entrepreneurs to step up and use their creativity and their imagination in order to meet these same possibilities and these same needs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Representative Runbeck, do you have other witnesses?
We could have Mr. Scarlett just tell us maybe a bit more about maybe the sorts of wealth, private wealth, that is available in this area.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Scarlett. Welcome
Robert
to the
Scarlett,
committee.
I'm here just to sort of speak to the question of who would invest in this type of corporation. I serve on as an investment committee member of a small foundation, but I meet frequently with larger foundation investment committee members here and throughout the country. And the chart that you've just been delivered earlier just sort of makes that point about the amount of the money that's available, of course, in the global capital markets, but also it shows in that little blue circle the amount of assets available at foundations. From a foundation perspective, when they give grants. They need to earn money, of course, to have grant money available. They need to keep growing and preserving the corpus. From a foundation perspective, there's a real strong and growing interest in finding corporations that are dedicated to a social purpose that also will produce a return. This helps those in the foundation community, for example, who have investment responsibility, who are not satisfied with the current negative screens that we have with socially responsible investments. So this is an area where foundations are looking very closely, are doing becoming much more active. So this is merely to address that point, that there is an interest out in the world of investors, and particularly with foundations and other private investors, to find vehicles that are dedicated to social and public benefit, that use the for-profit mechanism to attract capital and to achieve good in that particular way.
Thank you, Mr. Scarlett. For the record, would you please restate your name and spell it for us?
Sure. Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Robert Scarlett, S-C-A-R-L-E-T-T, as in O'Hara.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Runbeck, would you like to have your DE1 amendment moved?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
We had responded to a couple of concerns from the State Bar Association and incorporated that into the amendment.
Okay, do we have a motion to move the DE1 amendment? Representative Hoppe, any discussion on the amendment? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we've adopted the DE1 amendment. Any further testimony, Representative Runbeck?
Well, Mr. Chair, I know Minnesota corporate law has really kind of been in the forefront in the nation. So we think that this is an area in which we should again be sort of leading the way. Certainly there are plenty of successful entrepreneurs in this area that I think this would appeal to. We had another gentleman, I believe his company was Data Bank, and he wasn't able to be here tonight. But yeah, I think this is just the kind of thing that might be right for the next generation here.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck. I was looking at the bill, and you know, I wasn't sure about it, but I love this building we're in, and just fascinated often. And I'm going to vote for your bill just because of the authors. I find it so curious. So you have Runbeck and Mahoney in the House, and in the Senate you have Gerlach, Chamberlain, Hall, and then Marty and Rest. So it's just a fascinating coalition, and I'm excited to see where this leads us.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I think that it will have bipartisan support.
Yeah. Is there anyone else who would like to testify either for or against this bill? Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Lake, I'm representing the State Bar Association. I want to thank Representative Runbeck, as well as Mr. Scarlett, Mr. Young. We had a chance to chat some yesterday about this bill. Representative Runbeck mentioned that she incorporated some of our suggestions in her amendment today, and that is true. However, the business law section of the bar remains concerned about the bill, and the bar is very, very careful about not drifting into policy decisions, and it's certainly not our place to decide if a public benefit corporation is a good policy or a bad policy. However, attorneys that have years and decades of experience in the nonprofit and corporate world, both forming and advising these entities, are concerned that the bill as written, if it were to become law, is far too vague and undefined and really needs further development, and it would potentially put a lot of people in bad spots and lead to unnecessary litigation. So we have offered to continue working on this issue, put together a work group over the summer with attorneys who specialize in these areas and really study it. Public benefit corporations are kind of a new idea. They are now active in, I believe, 7 states. They've all been enacted, I think, in 2010 and 2011. There are a variety of kind of national standards that aren't followed in this bill. For example, it does not require a supermajority of directors to change the status of a corporation from a public benefit corporation to a regular corporation. It doesn't include a process for converting to and from a public benefit corporation. It's far less comprehensive than other statutes that set up these entities in other states. And I would also note that under current Minnesota law, under the corporate statute, community and societal considerations can be considered when directors are considering the best interests of the corporation. Also, if anyone is just interested in doing something similar like this under current law, they could do it under an LLC, which has no really restrictions on a purpose. An LLC can be formed for any lawful purpose or purposes. Also, there is something called B Corp certification, which is something similar to like Fair Trade Coffee or LEED certified, this status is conferred by a nonprofit called B Lab, and corporations that want to become a certified B Corp need to meet B Lab social and environmental standards. So, I mean, there are a lot of ways to kind of do this under current law, and again, the bar is not saying this is a good idea or a bad idea. Just wanted to caution folks that. Lawyers who are really experienced in this area believe that it just needs a little further development. And we are very willing to work with Representative Runbeck and the other proponents of this going forward and study it and just make sure that when it is implemented, it's workable and cohesive with current law.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. Is there anyone else who would wish to testify either for or against House File 2499?
Mr. Chair, can I just comment?
Who is speaking to me?
Oh, me, Runbeck. Sorry, Mr.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the bill was drafted in the revisor's office. I think we felt it was in good hands, and we have expressed to the Bar Association that we're willing to work with any and you know, incorporate any ideas that they have that they feel needed to be fleshed out.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. I believe the original motion, I don't recall who made the motion, but I believe the motion is to pass and refer to civil law.
Is that correct?
Any further discussion? As amended with DE1, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank
Representative
you, Mr.
Runbeck.
Chair.
Bill passes. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank all of the members for being here, and Mr. Reich, I'm sure you're getting paid copious amounts of overtime. But thank you to Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Ruvis, who knows, might have been sitting in the basement at this time anyhow. And thanks to Bethany and Mr. Pender. Thank you all for being here, and thank you, members. So I think that's all of our business for tonight.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Meeting is adjourned.